Mr. Gay Wan Gui, Rule 12. Mr. Gay, who were the people in these different sections that you mentioned that were set up?
The people was he was the head was Mr. Shinozaki, of course, and he had the Mr. Lim Boon Keng and other members of the Chinese Association, and they actually went up to Johor to find a suitable site for this, for the evacuation of the Chinese. And they finally saw this ideal valley not far from the sea, amidst the the Malay paddy field and the sea, very close to the sea, where a lot there's good fishing. There are still a lot of Malay villages who are quite friendly, and the whole area of forest, fertile forest, uninhabited. And they discovered that it was a very good piece of land, equally balanced for wet and dry farming. And of course they brought some agricultural experts to find out whether it was suitable for food growing. That was the prime purpose. And they sent surveyors to survey the land and open up the land. They were the pioneers.
Those names that you mentioned earlier, who were, you mentioned that they were there already, were they in a committee or in an organization?
No, they were very important people. They just went there, and later they sent the officials along. You see, you don't expect the general manager to go. He perhaps just go around and see, well, I want these to be done. And he would tell his officials or officers, experts, to mark on the map, and the officers would just understand and go and do. And perhaps later actually he went. And when he went later, Mr. Shinozaki actually went to stay to see how the work was carried on. It seemed he did mention in his book that he stayed among these people who cleared the forest land and so on, to see how the work was progressing. And I said it was marvelous how they cleared up the place and built the roads and the huts.
Those names that you mentioned earlier, that you said that they were there, that's why you decided to go also, were they the committee members of this?
Oh yes. They remained the committee members, and every now and then they will come up to see to examine and check on the progress. They always had the interest. They were very anxious that this plan succeeded.
So they were the planners in Singapore, and they went up occasionally to check.
Yes, yes. In fact, occasionally, quite often. Actually, quite often.
And after the place was developed, they went to stay there.
No, I don't think they went to stay there. Perhaps for a night or two, not to stay there for long, just to pay a visit and stay overnight or two nights or three nights, maybe for a while, to check on things, to hear what was needed.
Mr. Gay, besides picking the place and clearing them, did you know whether there were any other kind of preparation work being done by this committee?
There must have been quite a great deal. As I said already, to set up all these administrative and the various departmental offices would require real organization. It's just like running a small municipality.
How did you get to know about this setup at that time? I mean, the committee and the members?
Because at that time, when I was in Singapore, I didn't know. It's only when I went up, then they were all my friends. Chen Zhenji, Agricultural Department, my friend, my classmate. Another one, Martin Chen, he was running a school and coffee shop. He was also my friend. I said, Dr. Chen Apo, Health Department, Dr. Chen Apo, he was a doctor in Middle Road, the father of his person. So all these people I knew. I knew Mr. G.H. Kett, the brother of Goh Hood Keng. So all these people, you see.
So you only knew of the people who were involved in planning this after you went to Endow?
Yes. Not and this, John Ten, I knew there were departments organized, but I did not know the person personally yet. I only knew the persons backing the whole scheme, and they were responsible people, that they were the people whom the Japanese relied on, and they were responsible people and safe to put yourselves in their hands.
How did you get to know that Zenozaki and the Overseas Chinese Association were responsible for planning this?
The friends who discussed with me, the friends, the group of friends who came to my house. And
did you know where did the funds come from for this Endow scheme?
The friends?
The funds.
The funds. Oh, the Chinese Association. They had a lot of money, they used the money for that.
Did you know how were the responses among the people towards this scheme?
Oh, it was very good, I should say, because every time a convoy went up, it was full to the brim. We had to hang our bicycle outside by the side of the lorry. I remember I had my bicycle wheel ripped off and a total loss. Or a bicycle for nothing. And no place inside the lorry for it. And I was perched right on top. I don't know how I survived.
You mentioned that you had to register yourself. Could you tell us how did you go to register yourself?
Well, that I can't remember. We just submitted, we got a form, we just wrote, and then the name, one of my friends took the name down and took the whole list down, just put in. So obviously, my friend must have been a quite important chap to do that. Otherwise, and the day came, he just told me, he said, "Here, we are ready to go, you know, this is our batch. Let's go down to sit. The city steps there."
You registered through the friend, you did not go to the office to register?
No.
Did you remember when did you register through your friend?
I can't quite remember. We just said we are going and so hazy, I really don't know, we just as my wife might, I don't remember at all.
Did you remember the waiting period after you have submitted your registration and before you were told when you could leave? How long was that period?
No, we didn't wait too long, about a month or so. I remember going around with my friend to buy the wicker baskets, with a lid, quite big, this size, quite high, and all dumping our things inside the basket. In fact, we were allowed a certain number, I don't know, two per person or how many per person, I'm not quite sure. I think we were limited to certain number.
Certain number of belongings.
Baskets. See, we are not allowed to bring odds and ends, furniture and such things. If possible, as compact as possible. That was why we bought these rectangular baskets, so that we could squeeze in as much as we could of our clothes and so forth.
What did you bring along to Vendam?
Mostly clothing and a few essentials like pots and pans. And of course, the essential rice, sugar. That perhaps my wife would be able to tell you. I leave certain things to her, you see.
So during this 1 month of waiting before you actually departed, were there any kind of meetings for your batch to give some kind of instructions from the organizers, the planners?
No, we were... There wasn't any meeting at all, except we went around hunting for farming tools, yeah? Knives, axes, saws, and began to dream of all kinds of things that we thought we could do. But eventually, when we came face to face with a job, we just couldn't do it, yeah? And. No meeting except to discuss with each other and about the things that we had bought, and to inform on each other, to each other, not to duplicate certain things. That if I had bought a long saw, there's no need for you to buy the long saw, it's too expensive. If I bought so many pieces of hose, you no need for you to buy. You could borrow mine if you wanted to. So we discussed such things to save money.
So besides...
It was quite an exciting period.
Besides personal belongings and some food stuff, you brought along the equipment as well?
Yes, equipment, yes.
How did you know that you were limited to a certain amount of things that you could bring?
Again, I was told by... In fact, I believe we had a spokesman. And since he was living in town, he was working in China Building. He was obviously right down in the midst of these people. So he brought back information, and so the others did not bother to go and find out. He brought and gave information to us all.
No written instructions of any sort that were sent to all of you?
There might have been, but might have been in his hands, but I don't know. But he just told us, and we just followed what he said.
Did you remember for your batch, which batch was it to leave for Vendam?
I think we belong to the third batch. Yes, third batch.
When did you leave Singapore for Vendam?
I think it is the middle of end of 43. Near the end of 43. Or beginning of 44. I have no idea. End of 43 or beginning of 44. Around about that date.
Where did you meet to... where did all you gather before leaving?
I think we met near the Padang. there seemed to be the usual meeting place. Huh? I went to Padang. Right?
How many of you were there for that batch?
I have no idea, because we went a few lorries at a time, but according to people, there were 30 lorries altogether. It was a convoy, a few lorries at one time, a few lorries at one time. And you must remember that in those days, traveling could be quite dangerous. There was such people like bandits, we call them. They were actually anti-Japanese army people. And they would take pot shots at people, at the Japanese convoys. Of course, they wouldn't mistake us for the Japanese. Of course.
So, about 30 lorries. How many people in each lorry?
From what I could see, more things than people. People would be piled up here, there, not in a proper order. Of course, the children and the small children and women will all sit in the put in the safe places where they would not be thrown off or be in danger of being knocked by loose furniture or things. Whereas the more adventurous young people like myself, I was quite young at the time, we would cling on wherever we could on high perches.
So about how many in each lorry?
Roughly about 15 or 15 with the goods and things, 15 to 20. That's a terrible crowd, I tell you. Terrible crowd. The lorry is quite big, the like military truck, quite big ones.
When you gathered at the Padang, were there any kind of speech given before all of you went up the lorries?
I think there were, but we are not attentive. We are too busy tying up and getting our things secure, seeing that everything was put into our lorries, because otherwise it would be difficult to identify them. You see? We were not paying attention. I think we heard voices. Obviously, so there was some exhortation telling us where we were going and so on and so forth.
Any idea who was giving the...
I have no idea.
So each family was... each family stayed with their belongings in the lorry?
As far as possible.
How did you, in the first place, how did you get your belongings to the Padang?
The lorry would drive us... At the time, you see, there was the main trunk road, the main road, and this side road was pretty wide, you know, and they were inlaid with trunks of trees. You see, the trunks of the forest trees that were cut down were all put to provide a solid surface. So the lorries could actually go over, you know, and they would go over until you come to your lorong. You see, it's very simple. Main road, and this trunk, there's minor trunk road inside, right in, and lorong 1, lorong 2, lorong 3, lorong 4, lorong 5. Mine was lorong 5, you see. So the lorry will go in after the junction with lorong 5, stop, and then we will carry our things. And after all, you must remember that all those were packed in small packages. You're not allowed to bring huge, heavy things. So two persons could easily carry our barangs and things.
When you were in Singapore, how did you carry your things to the Padang from your house?
I think we hired our own transporter. Again, we had a lot of friends to help us. We combined our resources. The lorry would come down and then would bring us down. And the other friends said, "You are going, all right, we bring all our transport, we bring your family down. But some, they are not going, help us."
How many of your friends went with you during that, in that batch?
During that batch, no, not all of those people who came together to discuss went. You know. Only two of us went together. Mr. Yu and myself, two of us went together. The rest all went later. Because as I said already, they had to wait for the transport available.
When you were at the Padang and you were going up the lorries, did they take down any kind of registration or to check that you were the ones who were supposed to be there on that day?
No, I don't see anybody doing that. I don't see anybody doing that. But some other, when you went there and you went for your rice, your names were already there in the book, in Chinese characters and so on. You had to go to a store, there's a rice store, and you want to get your rice, you just go there. And then some other, somebody will write, the man in charge will write, your rice, you get so much and so on. They give you your first ration and take home. And so everything, as I said, was very well organized.
So, you were told of the departure date by your friend, then you went to the Padang. When did you go and get your rice? The rice was in Singapore or in Andal?
As I said, when we went, we had our own supply for some time.
And just now you mentioned that getting the rice, where was it?
When we reached there, those were short, the next day could get it. Eh? And you see, if you didn't have any rice, some other day they had some ways. There were people already there. Yes. And when you come to how we live in Andal, you know, every night there is there's a lorong, like a night market, you know, where they sell red beans, chok, and all like the hawker center, you know. You know, the Chinese, wherever they go, they sell food for you to eat. Yes. So there's no chance. These people know the new group is coming up. So they prepare these things. So the new group comes along, they have money, they just buy and eat the meal until they have a chance to cook your own meal. Eh? You need the Chinese alone for finding food for themselves. They will never starve. That's the wonder of it all. Huh?
So, In Singapore, you just brought along what you had to bring. You were not given your rations of rice in Singapore.
No.
So they did not check on you.
Because that would be an extra weight. Imagine 8 kgs per person. How much would that weigh?
They did not check your attendance. They did not check how many of you were there also when you got up the lorries.
No, I must qualify. You know. As I said already, my job was to see that my things were there. It was to get up and see that my two children are all right, my wife is safe, and so on. And my sisters. My sisters-in-law were rather small. That they were safe, they're all right. No harm had fallen on them, and that the things were intact. And I was worried about my bicycle, the loss of heel.
So you went up all the way to Andal by lorries.
Yeah.
Did any Japanese accompany the convoy to Andal?
No Japanese. As I said already, the first condition when Mr. Shinozaki undertook the job of setting up this new site, Andal site, was that it should be autonomous, that no Japanese should set foot there, that the Chinese should exercise full authority by themselves. That is the condition, that there should be no interference at all by the Japanese troops.
So who were the people who were the drivers?
The drivers were assorted. I mean, Malays and Chinese and Indians. And
they were not military trucks?
No, no. They were different. Oh, my goodness. As I said already, they were the Malayan people's anti-Japanese army, and they would shoot at the trucks if they found a uniform personnel driving, you see.
Could you describe the journey up to Andal? Did you meet with any incidents?
No, there were no incidents. Everything was smooth because we did not go very fast, about 30 to 40 miles per hour. Anyway, couldn't go fast because the things were piled high. Any great speed might topple the things over. And it was uneventful. Uneventful. And maybe the older people were fearsome, but were afraid. But we younger people found it was kind of adventurous journey. But it was very tiring indeed, especially for the women and children. Very, very tiring. Imagine one whole stretch, 135 miles.
How long did it take to reach there?
Well, we started in the afternoon, I think, and did not reach there until night time, about 9 o'clock. We must have stopped several times for people to stretch their legs.
What did you see on the way up?
Nothing, actually. Only some of the, luckily we were among a family group, but some of these, those among the youngsters were quite naughty, talking about people having pot shots at us and so on, that kind of thing. But there were incidents along the routes, there were incidents, but fortunately for convoys like ours, nothing happened.
What kind of incidents happened to you? Nothing happened to your
company? No, nothing happened to us.
Did you remember whether you stopped at any places for your meals?
I don't remember. We just stopped, but we didn't get out. I mean, we just stretched our legs a bit. Just a bit, I think. But that was about all. I think each whatever we brought ourselves, a few pieces of cake and so on. I don't know what other people did.
All this time, how did you and your family members feel about going when you were on the journey?
I think there was some sense of regret, because we were thinking we were going into something unknown. But fortunately there was somebody there saying that he had been there, he was quite good. Don't